Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 16th, 2025. As always, I begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Hometown Hero. On the air, News Gazette sports page, and there's a picture of a man taking a photo with his cell phone camera of a woman, older woman, with an Illinois athlete, it looks like. Let's read the caption. Illini running back, Aidan Lowry, A-I-D-A-N, last name Lowry, or Laffery. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I apologize. It's L-A-U-G-H-E-R-Y. Illini running back, Aidan Lowry, poses with Diane Durbin during the News Gazette sports page on Monday at the Esquire Lounge in Champaign. The Gibson City Melvin Sibley star was joined by family and friends from Ford County at the WDWS program ahead of his team's trip to the Music City Bowl. It's special when you have a community like that that gives back and supports you, he said. That photo was taken by Rob Lacates of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, IFAB Tech Hub, Alternative Protein Task Force, unveils findings roadmap. This article is written by Rob Lacates. He can be reached by email at RLECATES@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. You wouldn't expect a lawmaker who claims to be a devout meat eater and who has a dog named Bacon, middle name Burger, to be very enthused about the prospect of plant-based protein. But State Representative Mary Beth Canty, a Democrat from Arlington Heights, said while it's not a replacement for animal meat, the two complement one another well. There is room for all of us at this table, she said. Canty, C-A-N-T-Y, and State Senator Maddie Hunter, a Democrat from Chicago, co-chairs of the Illinois Alternative Protein Innovation Task Force, discussed its report and findings with other leaders in the alternative protein industry at an event Monday morning at the Illinois Fermentation and Agricultural Biomanufacturing Tech Hub on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Governor J.B. Pritzker established the task force in 2023 as the first standalone legislation to promote alternative proteins in the U.S. The first-of-its-kind team brought together food manufacturers, researchers, farmers, nonprofits, and state officials with a shared goal for strengthening Illinois' economic and agricultural future through food innovation. Food insecurity remains a significant challenge across the state, the report said, with 1 in 8 residents facing hunger. And the situation is even more severe for children. 1 in 6 experiences food insecurity. Policymakers who support this initiative can help introduce new markets for crop and agricultural byproducts, create job opportunities in rural and urban environments, and position the state as a leader in sustained food production and biomanufacturing. Recommendations from the report unveiled Monday include expanding opportunities for grants, loans, and tax incentives for businesses to pursue alternative protein manufacturing, investing in research and development at the university and industry level to solve technical problems, continuing to build a strong workforce pipeline with internships, apprenticeships, and academic programs and partnerships, ensuring existing state programs and policies serve the biomanufacturing sector, using public procurement to buy Illinois-made alternative protein products, maintaining a clear policy framework for innovation. Global demand for protein continues to skyrocket, introducing familiar foods in new ways from plants, animal cells, or fermentation can help meet that growing demand while strengthening and diversifying supply chains, conserving resources, reducing emissions, and driving innovation, Canty said. Currently, Illinois ranks third nationwide for the number of alternative protein production companies behind California and New York, said Beth Connerty, C-O-N-E-R-T-Y, an associate director of business development for the Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab on the U of I campus. For the 30 companies in the state, the IFAB Tech Hub site as a potential global leader station. Illinois has something other states don't, Connor T. said, a deep-rooted, powerful agricultural presence. I don't think any of the other states have all the pieces as Illinois does, she said. Hunter said alternative protein sources can address problems within the meat industry. Along with recent disruptions in the protein industry, like avian flu, it's clear that there is a need to create a more reliable, sustainable food system here in the state of Illinois, as well as here in our country, she said. She referred to research from Illinois Department of Public Health in 2021 that found that about 1 in 4 Illinoisans live in food deserts, which hinders them from finding cleaner, healthier options. In addition, around 95% of food consumed in Illinois was bought outside the state. That's 95%. The task force estimated there will be 10 billion on Earth by 2050, and given limited land and water resources, existing meat production will be unable to scale up indefinitely. We laid out a roadmap for my colleagues and I about how we can utilize our robust farmlands and expensive manufacturing industries, support our workforce, and ensure that healthy, quality food options are available in our communities, Hunter said. Panelists from ADM, Griffith Foods, Lonza Tech, and Primient provided industry insight. Mike Snodgrass, Global Managing Director of Alternative Proteins at Griffith Foods, said the company has worked on plant-based products since the 1940s. From that experience, he said food links everyone together, whether it be through religion, tradition, or other means of connection, and it is all dependent on the person. In the world of alternative proteins, what's alternative to me may not be alternative to you, he said. In traveling the world, tofu is everybody's diet in Asia. Here, we consider tofu to be an alternative protein. It's different. Food is very deeply rooted in who we are, so asking somebody to switch to a plant protein and trade out of an animal protein isn't going to happen overnight, he said. It's this generational change that we start to see happening. Through it all, Snodgrass said he's excited to see how appetites and diets change over time. If you look at consumers on the campus here at the U of I, they're probably making some choices that were very different than a generation ago on what they put in their mouths and what's being fed in the dining halls, he said. So I think that's the exciting part, is to continue to look at how consumer choices ultimately shape our food landscape. And there's a photograph, one photograph that accompanies this article. It's of people with plates in a line, and there's a long table of kind of different food options, and they're kind of serving themselves food. The caption reads, State Senator Mattie Hunter, Democrat from Chicago, left, co-chair of the Illinois Alternative Protein Innovation Task Force, samples some alternative protein products available during the launch of the task force final report Monday morning at the Illinois Fermentation and Agricultural Biomanufacturing Tech Hub on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. That photo is provided or taken, excuse me, by Rob Cates for the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Restoration Urban Ministries. Officials. Vacant building that caught fire set to be demolished. This article is written by Jana Wiersema. She can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. Investigators continue to work on a weekend fire that damaged a dilapidated building belonging to a local nonprofit. Steve Shuren, executive director of Restoration Urban Ministries, said the blaze damaged a rec room and 3 or 4 apartments no longer in use in the structure, which was already slated for demolition. It's leaning on one side, he said, of the building, at 1208 Parkland Court. It's just old. It's an old hotel, and it's just in disrepair. He noted that the organization did lose some materials that were being kept in the rec room, which was used to store items such as beds, chairs, slow cookers, and a microwave. Champaign firefighters were called at 1228 a.m. Saturday for a report of a fire in the vacant two-story apartment building. Upon arrival, they found a fully involved apartment on the first floor with flames starting to spread to neighboring units. A second alarm was called and more units arrived at the scene. Multiple hose lines were used to put out the fire. No firefighters were injured. Champaign police told the News Gazette on Monday that they are working with the fire department to determine the cause. When asked how soon the fire-damaged building might come down, Shuren said that it's a matter of funding. We'd probably demolish it today if we had the funds to do it, he said. As for what the property might be used for after that, he replied that it would be hard to say, but added that the organization previously drew up plans for refurbished apartments and would like to create units that provide more space for families than the old hotel rooms. He added that the fire did not damage a neighboring building that holds the organization's transitional housing program, which is expected to open in late January with space for about 16 families. While the organization previously considered ending the program amid financial difficulties, Shuren said it was kept afloat thanks to fundraising, staff adjustments, and unit repairs. It's not quite open yet, but it's pretty close, he said. He added that donations to Restoration Urban Ministries are always welcome. And there's one photo that accompanies this picture, article, and it's of an older hotel, two stories, looks greenish in color. The caption reads, Champaign firefighters battled a blaze this weekend at this vacant apartment building at 1208 Parkland Court in Champaign, owned by Restoration Urban Ministries, and slated for demolition. That photo is taken by Luke Taylor of the News Gazette. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Thanks to Principal Justin Keane, K-E-A-N, and all of Gibson City Melvin Sibley Elementary for taking an idea of ours and running full speed with it. For the cover of our upcoming Music City Bowl special section, sports editor Matt Daniels asked the family of Illini standout and GCM grad, Aiden Laffery, if he could meet at his elementary school. We thought having a few students there to cheer them on would be nice. A few, quote-unquote, turned out to be the entire student body and staff. Many kids bringing posters they made for their favorite Illini, a last-minute assembly organized by Keane, packed the gym and served as the perfect backdrop for photo editor Robin Scholes. It was a wonderful scene made possible by a supportive community. Aiden and the Illini has a ton of fans here, Keane said. Not only is he very well known and loved, but his mom is a teacher at the elementary school. Aiden was impressed, and impressive. Not only did he interact with those on hand, he recorded a message for the student who went home sick earlier in the day and missed his appearance. Aiden took questions, signed autographs, and posed for pictures. He played to the crowd by asking the students to predict the score of the Illini's game against Tennessee. It was awesome to have Aiden and his parents here, Keane said. The kids were very excited and loved when he asked them what the score would be, and they all said 6-7 or 6-2-7. Robin's photos and Matt's story will appear in these pages on December 30th. For a sneak peek, you can visit us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And there's one photo taken by Matt Daniels for the News Gazette. And it's of Laffery with his parents behind him. And someone's taking a photo. And behind him are all the kids in the bleachers who've turned out for his visit. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always reach out to Jim Rosso at JROSSOW at newsgazette.com. Now, history. Area history. In 1925, the Republican ticket for the county primary on April 13th is pretty well lined up, with five candidates ready to run for nomination for sheriff, one announced and another on the fence in the race for treasurer, two in the race for county judge, and two others with prospects for no opposition. No other names are being mentioned, and the runners-up naturally are hoping that none will be. It's a little early, however, to prognosticate. In 1975, in a controversial move, the Urbana City Council approved the hiring of Alan Hullett, fire chief of Elk Grove Village, as Urbana's new chief, the first outsider, quote-unquote, ever appointed to that role. A week or so later, this is in parentheses and a follow-up, a week or so later, Hullett turned down the offer to take a job with the United Nations Fire Rescue Training Unit in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. In 2010, Westville School Board members unanimously approved a $2.27 million tax levy, which is just $45,350 more than the current one. Superintendent Jim Owen said most of the additional revenue would go toward employees' retirement benefits. Owen said he expects the assessed valuation of property in the district to go down, so the tax rate will increase by a little under 1% to generate the additional revenue. And in international history, today's highlight. On December 16th, 1773, the Boston Tea Party took place as American colonists boarded British ships in Boston Harbor and dumped more than 300 chests of tea overboard to protest tea taxes. That's the Boston Tea Party, December 16th, 1773. The next headline reads, and now an opinion article by Jim Dye. Illinois' abortion policy places Carbondale in a hot spot. Illinois has become an abortion mecca, a legal island in the midst of other Midwestern states with more restrictive abortion access rules. Because of its geographic location in Illinois, the community of Carbondale, located within driving distance of 10 states with more restrictive laws, has become what the New York Times called a major abortion hub, quote-unquote, within the land of Lincoln. In a lengthy December 7th feature story, the Times reported that last year, three clinics in this city of 21,000 provided close to 11,000 abortions, almost all for women from other states. The numbers provided by the clinics account for nearly a third of all out-of-state abortions in Illinois, the Times reported. The U.S. Supreme Court, or courts, 2022, Dobbs versus Jackson ruling, returned the abortion question to state legislators, reversing a decision that legalized abortion nationwide. That's 2022. Illinois, led by abortion advocate Governor J.B. Pritzker, and legislators, both maintained and expanded Illinois' reputation as a state where legal abortion is available. Other states took more mixed approaches. As a consequence, the Times said, the change in policy placed Carbondale, a liberal enclave, in a deeply conservative region, in a complicated position. And these are, again, quotes from the Times article. People in the city are generally supportive of its status as a safe harbor, but the sheer number of abortions has also created some unease and worry about a backlash, the Times said. There were roughly 1 million abortions in 2024 in states where it is legal. Of that number, the Times said there were 155,000 abortions performed on women who crossed state lines. Abortion services not only draw women to Carbondale, but also anti-abortion counselors who try, sometimes successfully and sometimes not, to have a face-to-face conversation with them. The counselors offer these women a free ultrasound at an affiliated outlet nearby. By showing them cardiac activity, they try to dissuade them from having the procedure, the Times said. can-do guy. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican from Mahomet, was cited as one of 20 Democrats and Republicans who actually get things done in Springfield. Okay, so this is a series, actually, of articles. The study of legislators' effectiveness was conducted by the Center for Effective Lawmaking, a nonpartisan think tank involving the University of Virginia and Vanderbilt University. Researchers assigned each legislator a score, determined how many bills they introduced, how many passed, and how many were signed by the governor during the 2023-24 legislative season. Another Republican, State Senator Sue Rezin, R-E-Z-I-N, of Morris, was cited in the study of effective GOP legislators. Democrats, however, hold supermajorities in both the House and the Senate, and they drive the legislative process. So it's no surprise that House Speaker Chris Welch topped the list of most effective House Democrats. Another House veteran, State Senator Jay Hoffman of Belleville, came in at number two. Among state Senate Democrats, President Don Harmon was deemed the top performer. Of the 20 legislators cited in the study, just two came from the Champaign County, East Central Illinois region. Rose and former state senator Tom Bennett, a Republican from Gibson City. While Republicans have little clout in Springfield, the study found that being a Democrat did not guarantee effectiveness. For Democratic state representatives and senators ranked at the bottom, most reported only a handful or even no bills at all getting past the first committee, the study said. Now, the cat and the rat. The rats are still running the show in Chicago. No, not the political rats, the real ones. Assigned by city officials to dramatically reduce Chicago's rat population, feral cats are proving to be disappointing loafers. A study conducted by Lincoln Park Zoo's Urban Wildlife Institute shows that feral cats either lack a certain killer instinct or they're extremely picky eaters. How did researchers conduct this study of cats' recreational and dining habits? It's a two-step process. Rat foes use a chemical, anticoagulant rodenticides, to kill rats. So investigators, using a study group of 57 feral cats, searched for traces of rodenticides in the cats. Just 7% had traces in their blood systems, significantly less than that of other species subjected to the same test. Meanwhile, the rats are laughing all the way to the garbage cans, and for good reason. Another study shows rats have become increasingly tolerant of the rodenticides. And there is a photo of a hand giving a mammogram, you know, having the tool over a woman's stomach, an abdomen. And that's an Adobe stock image. The next headline reads, from My Turn by Mike Carroll, Tuscola, 1957, the year of living in fear. Things are crazy scary today, but consider 1957, the year I was almost killed by a hot dog. I was 10 years old. It happened at Howard Kugel's Bowling Alley, Highway Bowl, now home of the Tuscola Moose Lodge. They had this little food counter, lots of 50s chrome, formica, and red plastic that screamed, "Fonzie ate here." I ordered a hot dog and slathered it with gobs of ketchup and mustard. Then I lifted it to my mouth, squeezed the bun, and evidently squeezed the rear of the bun a little bit too hard. The entire dog unexpectedly shot into my mouth, down my throat, and got stuck. I panicked, fearful this was how it ends, and me only 10. The more I frantically tried to breathe, the tighter that weenie became wedged. It was stuck tighter than my legs were last year when, after a 4-pound weight loss celebration, I tried to get into some old 70s bell-bottom pants. Fortunately, my neighbor and friend, Floyd Jr. Barbie, appeared and whacked me hard in the middle of my back. That ketchup and mustard-covered missile shot out of my mouth and splatted onto Howard Kugel's formica countertop. It slid a few feet and just laid there staring back at me. My dog launched around the same time the Soviet Union's Sputnik rocket launched, blasting through the Earth's atmosphere on October 4th, 1957. Sputnik caused national panic, exposing a missile gap in the U.S., since it was obvious the evil Soviet Empire was ahead of us in space technology. At the time, we were deep in a Cold War with our arch-rival, the Soviet Union, an equal nuclear power, a rivalry that started in 1947 after the end of World War II and continued on through Senator Bernie Sanders' honeymoon there in 1988. The missile gap led to the space race, which, among other things, caused a construction boom and underground nuclear fallout shelters. Everyone was scared, especially in Tuscola, where it was feared that our town, with its big chemical plant, interstate highway, major rail lines, and gas pipelines, was the Soviets' number one bomb site, what with being the middle of America's industrial might. At least that's what some guy at Dixie Cream Donut Shop said, and why would he lie? And all of us grade school students were also scared. Teachers tried to ease our anxiety by having us practice lining up against the outside wall and or crouching under our desks after watching films of the horrendous destruction that a nuclear bomb blast. We thought, hey, who are they kidding? Even at age 10, we knew that if a nuclear bomb hit close by, there would be no more school or school kids for a while. Fear of danger was everywhere in 1957, from drop bombs to wedged food. The sudden fixation on rocket ships heavily influenced culture and design at the time, especially with car designs. Almost every 1957 American car featured large rocket ship-like tail fins that stuck up or angled out from the rear. They are all classics. The 57 Chevy Bel Air, 57 Thunderbird, 57 Cadillac Eldorado Brougham, 57 Lincoln Premier, 57 Chrysler 300C and its Dodge and Plymouth cousins, etc. But even that was scary. Whenever a 1957 car, especially one with loud glass-pack muffers, roared by, I imagined Sputnik plunging earthward toward Tuscola with a nuke. This triggered an instinctive dive into a drainage ditch preservation maneuver. Unfortunately, this explanation for being constantly in a state of dirty dishevelment never cut the mustard with my mom. Perhaps I should have cut the mustard on that dog. Dad and Mom bought one of those 57 rocket ships in Chicago, a two-tone green Ford Fairlane Club Victoria. At first, Dad walked away from the deal since they were $100 apart. As Dad drove away in our old 54 used police car, Ford clunker, Melinda and I, fearing we'd never make it home in that bucket of bolts, started crying. We said we loved that two-tone green car, but really we just wanted to get home alive. To our shock, it worked, as Dad turned around and bought it, after jawing them down $50. 1957. The year of just trying to breathe, literally and figuratively. To this day, when eating, I cut my food into microscopic pieces that would fit in a small thimble. Plus, I have a morbid fear of ash-flicking smokers, that and loud mufflers. Mike Carroll of Tuscola is a retired circuit judge and former state's attorney in Douglas County. He pretty regularly writes opinion columns in Town Hall, of the B section of the paper, which we're now heading into for today. And I will read more in part two of today's paper, the News Gazette, in just a few minutes, so please stay with me. This has been a reading of part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 16th, 2025. It's always a pleasure to read with you. Thank you for listening, and I'll return with you shortly. Have a wonderful day.